kicked on with a second session, which starts with me. Always a bit uncomfortable introducing yourself, but I will say this, that the email questions did start to work. I got one hit me about 5 minutes, unfortunately, after the session had finished, but that was a couple that came through. So please, if you do have any questions, particularly for me when I'm standing up, but also for the others in the sessions, timsboot@gmail.com, or if you're into Twitter, that's EFTAP08 is the Twitter code. Anyways, let me introduce myself. I work for a hotel club in Orbitz doing revenue management, and I'll start kicking myself off somehow. Okay, thanks, Tim. So the session I wanted to speak to about today is a theme that I've had running on the blog for quite some time, and I call it too much information, helping consumers who are now mature online, excited about online, just doing it online, helping them sort through all the enormous amounts of information that are out there on the internet. And so I think I often find a useful way to kind of touch on this is to do a quick little sort of history, or my version of the history of online travel, to explain to ourselves how we ended up, you know, being here in what is now a mature business, but also how consumers have changed, and therefore how us as mature businesses have to change as well. So, firstly, let's touch on a very simple question, which is, if there is too much information, how much information is there? And the answer is an extraordinary amount. So I've got a few examples here that I stole from Wikipedia pages. YouTube, it goes without saying, is probably the most unmonetized site on the planet, with 79 million users and 3 billion video views a month. Just extraordinary. I just typed in the word travel, 254,000 videos came up. So consumers who are hoping to get easy answers out of the video sharing sites are going to be overwhelmed with the number of videos to watch, hours that they're going to watch. We saw from Dan earlier that the enormous response rates he's getting on a very small number, a relatively small number of videos in relation to cruising. So you could spend years online just trying to watch all of the videos that there are as a consumer. We'll leave it to listen to Claire when she speaks in her presentation. Billions of searches being conducted each month, and travel being one of the largest players in that space because, well, frankly, every word's in play in travel. If you're in the financial space doing mortgages and loans, you've kind of got 10, 15 words to bid for. In travel, every word's in play because every word almost, every activity we can think of is associated with some sort of travel experience. So extraordinary amounts of information. And then looking at reviews itself, I've spoken at the blog in an interview with the CEO of this little company, Uptake, who was doing the meta search of reviews. So they're trying to index all the various reviews out there rather than sort of the traditional meta search as we know it, indexing prices and products. They've just started in America and they've indexed 20 million reviews in just America alone. So I'm sure once they start to expand globally and others start to do this, we are talking about a quantity of information that consumers just cannot understand, let alone the supplier angle of having 20 million reviews out there and as a owner of a hotel or owner of an airline trying to understand what the consumers are saying about you and how they think about you. So with all that information floating around, how do we end up there? I'd like to sort of touch on this little historical piece first to get there. I think back to when I first joined Expedia in the late 90s in the UK, which was sort of part of this gold rush boom of travel that was going on. And the consumers asked a very, very particular experience of online travel at that stage. It was a very narrow experience. I know exactly where I'm going. I know exactly what flight I want to catch. I know exactly what day I want to travel. All I want you to do is give me a price. Get the hell out of my way. I don't want advice. Every time you tried to put up content in 1999, it wasn't read. Every time you invested in mobile, it was ignored. All consumers wanted was the cheapest flight price from point X to point Y. Very hard experience when you're an excited online entrepreneurial type bunch of people in online travel when consumers are just being extraordinarily narrow-minded about the experience they want from you, a price-based one. Look, a couple of key elements during this time. This was during this time, for those who can remember, Travelocity bought Preview Travel and became the biggest for a couple of weeks until Expedia caught up with them and became the biggest. The airlines freaked out, got together and formed Orbitz and created the number three player. There was also some exciting kind of IPO activity, to say the least. Last Minute was floated in the UK and was like rock star status for the owners. And back down here in quiet old Australia, travel.com.au became a public company. So very active transactionally, very active in a commercial environment, but all focused around giving the consumer the best price, or the consumer who knows exactly where they want to go, exactly what they want to do. Moving on a little bit to the next phase, as I read it, when you kind of got getting into 2000, 2001, and tragically around the time of the collapse of the Twin Towers and the other attacks associated with 9/11, consumers started to get an appetite for a little bit of assistance with where they wanted to stay. Okay, I bought the ticket from New York to LA, I bought the ticket Sydney to Melbourne, London to Paris. I kind of think I know where I want to stay. I've got some friends who've recommended it, but I could do with a little bit of advice, but mainly I want about the price. And particularly as the 9/11 events produced such terrible occupancy rates in hotels, enabling merchant rate vendors to swoop in and get good prices, this started to feed a little bit of advice on where to stay. But within in constraints, consumers knew exactly where they were going, and they knew exactly the type of hotel, and they had a bit of advice from friends and family to draw on. Big things around this, again, without giving too much credit to Expedia. Expedia, bought Travelscape and started to get really involved in the merchant model. Travelocity and Orbitz followed very quickly with merchant rates of their own. But outside of the Americas, local players sprung up. Hotel Club, who I work for, sprung up out of Sydney. What If, springing out of Brisbane. Not to mention Booking and Active springing up out of the European market, HRS and Hotels.de springing up out of the European market, all going after this consumer who started to say, I'm with you now. I'll take a little bit of advice. I'll do something else other than booking this flight, but not too much, just the hotel price and a good rate, and then I'm done. Other thing that has sprung out of that is that towards the latter part of this phase, Ryanair hotels and EasyJet hotels became some of the biggest hotel vendors in Europe. Without a hotel-facing brand at all, but with extraordinary distribution as we start to see consumers being fed from product A, the flight, into product B, the hotel. Now we get on to sort of a slightly more modern history, where consumers have done something with the internet that they've never done before in online travel. They asked an open-ended question. So the big part of that first phase was, I know exactly where I'm going, how much is the price? I know exactly where I'm going, I've got a great idea about the hotel, how much is the price? To now, consumers are just typing in destinations. Where do I go next? What about Antarctica? What about a cruise? What about a safari? Questions which technology is traditionally really bad at answering, because it requires experience and knowledge rather than just a set of results. And again, there's lots of statistics we can quote here from where are you now raising more than $10 million on the back of a social network. TripAdvisor's non-stop acquisition campaign around vertical sites in specialist content areas. The fact that Google costs per click have gone from being a nice direct return to, in some of the big keywords, being a marketing play where you're paying more than a buck, more than 100% of the profit for a click. So enormous amounts of activity now around content and around helping consumers answer an open-ended question for the first time. And as we come into 2008, and consumers have spent a lot of 2006 and 7 asking this open-ended question, we get to this period that I call too much information, where you're confronted with 20 million reviews, you type in the word African safari, and there's just so many hit results that a consumer has no idea what to do with them. Consumers go and type in the word hotels in Florence and are confronted with millions of combinations. Not even sure which meta search to go with because there are so many. On the supplier side, the suppliers have got 10, 15 extranets to manage. They've got their GDS rates to manage. They've got a couple of channel managers knocking on their door every week asking for another bit of connectivity. When you're an intermediary, you've got direct connects and Pegasus connections and extranets and flexible rates and fixed rates. You've got pay-per-click marketing, cost-per-click marketing, affiliate marketing, direct marketing, trying to figure out how to value direct marketing. And now we've kind of got different marketing channels that were complicated a long time ago and hopefully getting a bit easier around mobile and around social networking. So much information that consumers are getting just a little bit crazy about and a little bit lost, trying to turn to their friends again on Facebook to give them advice. Suppliers are trying to figure out how to get decent connectivity solutions and intermediaries are trying to keep up with all the marketing channels and ideas. And of course, this is complicated. again by the fact that it's different for each country. In my little intro, you recall, I mentioned that Asia-Pacific is two simple words, but it goes nowhere near those two simple words describing the complexities of operating in a multilingual, multi-country environment. Just turning what the hotel club does, one of our best markets, both as a source market and a destination market, is the Chinese market. We're in traditional and simplified Chinese, very active in mainland and in the areas you could call Greater China. But we have to be very conscious that in those markets, the domestic and inbound businesses are still very split. They're still very different looking at domestic, outbound and inbound. Something you don't think so much about when you look marketing to the United Kingdom or you're marketing to Australia online. The way we do payment methodologies is different. If you looked at Ctrip's results recently, 70% of Ctrip sales are offline in a call centre. That's enormous for an online company. Most online companies like us were doing less than 5%. So China is a market, when you're doing domestic, you have to think very differently to when you're doing outbound. You have to think, again, very differently when you're doing inbound, particularly the amount of information you give consumers to help them coming inbound to understand which hotels to go at. Layer on top of that, the Olympics, and it's where the hotels held back inventory for extraordinarily long periods of time and then panicked, started dumping inventory. It's a very complicated market, and not one which you can think of we'll have an Asian strategy, and we'll get our success in the Chinese market. Similarly, the Japanese market is manifestly different. For those who know it well, about 95% of the Japanese online air market is dominated by the suppliers. Intermediaries are effectively non-existent on online air for any real stretch of imagination. But on the hotel side, it's almost the flip side. 85 to 90% of online hotels are sold domestically. And if I was asked you to write down the top five players in the online hotel space in terms of total travel turnover, I don't think many of you would put a Japanese player in there, but there is one, who's, I think, number five or number six. Rakuten is one of the biggest online hotel players on the planet. And not many people have heard of them because they operate almost exclusively domestically in Japan. And as us, as Hotel Club, as an online retailer, we're in Japanese. It's one of our top six source markets and also one of our top six destinations, a very important part for us. But again, we have to split our brains in half and think very differently about inbound and outbound for Japan and think about a completely different competitor set and how we support consumers and how we support hoteliers wanting to attract themselves to the Japanese market. We can't think about an Asian strategy and hope we wrap up Japan in that. We have to think very clearly and unambiguously about our Japanese strategy. Turning to our home markets of Australia, there's some similarities there, I think, with the Japanese market in that online air here is still predominantly dominated by the airlines, though in the last two or three years we've seen that change, particularly the results of Webjet and now Travel.com, they use part of What If, and Expedia's entered the market, and Zuji's been in the market for a while, so there's a lot of competition coming from the intermediaries, but still, air is the big player. And the reverse, again, is still, I think, the case with hotels, that the dominant players are intermediaries. But you've got a much more mature market, I think, than anywhere else in Asia except for Japan. You've got a very mature traveller, knows how to use the internet very well, is definitely searching 5 to 10 websites before they make a booking, is definitely looking outside of Australia to make bookings, happy to go to European players to make bookings in Europe and American players to make bookings in America. So you can't just have an Asia-Pacific strategy and hope you're going to catch up the Australians. You've got to be very targeted and very deliberate in how you market to them. And the last one I want to talk about, of course, was the European themselves, where we can sit here in Asia-Pacific and hope we don't have to pay attention to the Europeans, but from an inbound perspective, they're an enormous part of the business into Asia and into Australasia. And we have to think differently about this. The competitive setup there is, once again, dramatically different. It's not enough as a business like ours just to put out French, German, Italian and Spanish and now Russian and Polish and more. We have to be targeted in the way we market to European consumers, all of which are at different stages. And it's probably useful then when we're thinking about these different stages to touch on the market size numbers. And I've got some figures here from an accumulation of Focusrite studies that they've published. And the bottom one here, I'm going to point this. So this is your US market in terms of US dollar billions per year. This is your European market. And a little piece on top is the Asian market. And over here, I've done some CAGR numbers. And of course, you can see a couple of interesting trends here, not least of which the fact that Europe and Asia are still enjoying substantial growth and then the maturity in the US. But also that now we're almost getting close to the US being half of the world, whereas it had been a dominant part of the world for so long. We had 142 for Europe and Asia, 158 for the US. We're almost at that point where if you are a global company, you have to spend more than half of your time thinking outside of America, which is a challenge for us as at Hotel Club, but something we have to spend a lot of time doing. I still think we've got a lot more growth here to come in Asia. I don't sense any slowing other than that generated by economic concerns, and the European market seems to be holding up well around these economic concerns as well. I would expect, I think we all do, that there's still going to be some softening in the US market. And from a Hotel Club perspective, again, that means we can't just think about the world or Europe or America or Asia Pacific. We've spent a lot of time and invested a lot of money and energy in thinking country by country, through dedicated country managers on both the sourcing and on the marketing side, dedicated language specialists and dedicated marketing campaigns to make sure we can help solve that kind of too much information issue that consumers globally are doing it. So touching on a little bit more about how we do that, I'd like to walk through briefly some of the marketing efforts we've taken to help consumers get through this this information maze and this information overload. And the biggest one we do is we have a dedicated rewards and membership program. It's called the Dream Club. It works across both of our brands, all three of our brands, so Hotel Club, Rates to Go, and Asia Hotels. Consumers can earn reward dollars on every booking that they make and then use those to spend on subsequent bookings. So there's no sort of crazy minimum thresholds. There's no random Qantas anytime pricing. They can up the number of miles. It's a very simple, every dollar you earn, every dollar we give you back, you can spend on a subsequent booking. We use that to do a lot of targeted campaigns. We're just celebrating the 10th birthday of the launch of hotelclub.com, and for the rest of this week, giving people the ability to sort of put $10 straight into their into their membership bucket, which they can then spend on bookings. We give bonuses for people who refer other members to join the program. We normally send a few bucks people's ways on their birthdays, and there's a string of newsletters that we put together to market to consumers. And why I say a string is that we can't just send out an Asian newsletter and a European newsletter. We have to send out a Japanese targeted newsletter and an Australian targeted newsletter. Those targeted for longer stays out, those targeted for shorter stays out. We've spent a lot of time, energy and money making sure we have segmented our consumers properly in those newsletters so there's a lot of value for the consumer, but also for the hotelier that we're supporting there. We just crossed the million mark of members in Australia, and we've got more than 5 million globally, so we do spend a lot of time focusing on that program outside of Australia. And relatively recently, we joined the kind of tiered processes you see with a lot of membership campaigns, having set up the baseline sort of silver, gold, and the lovely platinum membership. And again, relatively simple. The more bookings you make, the higher you go up the tier, and the more of a reward you get. So a base silver member is going to get 4% back on Hotel Club, gold's going to get 5%, and platinum's going to get 6%. So the strategy around this is the combination of the reward, the reviews that we carry on the site, and the newsletters we're sending to consumers in a targeted format will help them trust us as the source for getting around this the areas of difficulty with too much information or being overwhelmed by the quantity of information that's available. And we also back that up with other touch points with the consumer. So as well as being members, we've got a bunch of programs we run to help consumers stay in touch with what's going on and travel in their thoughts. We work with insight guides to produce guidebooks around the best hotels in Asia, UK and Ireland, Australia and New Zealand. We use a global survey program that we run every year called the Best Hotel Club Hotel Awards, where every year we rank, we ask consumers to nominate the best hotels, whether they're contracted with us or not. It's a free form environment. We have lots of partners who help run a nomination program. At the end of each year, we have a series of awards for the best nominated hotels by consumers online. And of course, we're sitting on, like most others, sitting on millions of reviews to help consumers get an understanding about hotels and places they don't know very well. So again, putting points of trust around information. You can trust us for reviews on hotels that are editorialised. You can trust us to collect some of the information from consumers, and then we'll do an award program as well, all about sorting through the information. Let me just quickly touch on the company, a little sort of word from my sponsor for a moment. So I work for Orbitz.com, who's one of the largest online travel retailers. We've got three divisions, the Hotel Club division, which I've talked through with three brands here. We operate Cheap Tickets and Orbitz in the US, and eBookers.com is our European full-service brand. and we have our own user-generated content media network across America where consumers try a lot of advice and reviews around travel and travel experiences. I won't do too much more, but just to touch very briefly on Hotel Club and Rates to Go, we've got offices in 20 countries. We're in now 13 languages. We just launched Russian last week and are now doing 14 currencies. We just launched Thai 2 weeks ago. And I've talked a lot about the multi-channel booking platform. So I suppose the wrap-up from me was hopefully give a little picture of my view of how much information there is out there for consumers and how challenging it is for them, giving a little bit of historical perspective that consumers are now turning to us as suppliers and intermediaries and marketeers and sales and marketing professionals to answer open-ended questions online and with technology for the first time. And sort of be able to support those answers, you need to be able to develop trust with consumers, build up a relationship with consumers, so that they can turn to you when they're confused about where the information comes from. So, final one, I suppose, to close, after I've given a bit of sponsorship, to close with a little comment on my blog. I've just posted up here a couple of subjects we've talked about recently on the boot. Talking a lot recently about whether all these content companies are going to survive the downturn in the economy as advertisers might be holding back on money. I had a recent blog post on how difficult it is to find good quality staff, particularly in Australia, as the market has been so successful and looking for people with the right set of skills. I think sort of building on David's point from Pegasus about finding people with the right travel to information. I had a little talk about how, again, there are lots of different sites targeting niche content sites. I found a site called etnavolcanotours.com. What do? They do tours around Volcano Etna, and they're not making a lot of monetization off that, unfortunately. Up to TripAdvisor with its 20 million reviews. And then I did a post recently about how I lost at poker to a Royal Flush, which, for those of you who know, there's a 1 in 674,000 chance of being beaten by a Royal Flush, and you're meeting someone who's a 1 in 674,000 loser. Who lost to a Royal Flush to a buddy of mine who still is cheering about it. So on that note, I will close off. If you want to find the boot, you can find it at this URL, which is rather complicated, or these are my top four sources of traffic. People typing in my name, people typing in at Qantas VOD never works, people who constantly type in who owns TripAdvisor, it's a number three source of traffic that I get, the people don't know who owns TripAdvisor, and some strange reason I get a lot of traffic from people looking how to get a black Amex card. I don't know why they asked me, but they do. So I'll now hand over back to myself and then I'll introduce Chris and we'll keep going again.